This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. So just like you, he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know what powers every dream, Lisa?
Tell me.
Payroll.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. From your first paycheck to lifelong security, none of it happens without someone making sure you actually get paid. Wild, right? Behind every payday, there's a professional who makes it happen. A real person, not some magical ATM fairy flinging 20s around. This September 15th to 19th, it's National Payroll Week, and the National Payroll Institute wants your stories. Even you, Lisa. Like, even you. Actually, no, you probably can't because you're part of the show.
Oh,
don't enter.
Okay.
You can encourage others to enter.
I will.
But the National Payroll Institute wants your stories. Maybe it's your first summer job, your maternity leave, or that glorious moment you got paid on time and didn't have to survive on instant noodles. Post your story with hashtag power of payroll and hashtag contest. Tag National Payroll Institute, and you could win a $250 prepaid credit card. Plus, for every post with those hashtags, National Payroll Institute donates $1 to Food Banks Canada, up to $25,000. 25 large, 25K, as we call it on the streets.
The streets.
Payroll power is more than just paychecks, of course. It keeps the lights on, literally, including the one over my head right now. Actually, all four of them. So there you go.
Greedy. Payroll's important, man. People depend on things all the time. Good for them. And good for them for donating to the food banks. I like that.
I agree. You get to win some money and do some good, which is nice. I think that's great. Owen, are we going to start the theme?
Welcome to Politics is Broken with Brittle Star and Lisa B. Canadian and global politics unspun. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then we'll begin.
Welcome to Politics is Broken. My name is Brittle Star.
My name is Lisa.
And today, in today's episode, we're going to talk about starting over, which seems apropos, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, it feels like a brand new venture between me and you, Lisa.
It does. We're going to see how this goes. I do feel good about it. I do.
Well,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, in this episode, we explore how Canada is hitting the reset button politically, economically, and academically. Millions of students are heading back to class as teachers push for better conditions. Pierre Poilievre, remember him?
Mm. I'd like to not remember him.
is back in the house with a softer tone and sharper promises. Yeah, we'll see. And the U.S. has shut the door on tariff-free shipping, forcing small businesses to relearn the rules of cross-border trade. Spoiler alert, though, starting over isn't always cleaner or simpler, but it is a chance to ask, does this actually work? Which I like that. I like that. I actually really like starting over. I like this time of year.
Do you? It does feel like it's the time for change and, you know, a new beginning and all those kinds of things. Change is hard for a lot of people, though, right?
It is.
And so it's, we get to see. We get to see, right? You get to start. It's like buying school supplies. Like, it's all new. Mm. You get to be, you get to pick whatever you want and that fresh start. So this is like new school supply shopping day.
When you were, just even now, I was going to say when you were a kid, but even now, I was ready to buy notebooks, like blank notebooks all the time. And it always felt like this is, you're turning a new leaf. I'm starting something new. I'm resetting everything. I'm pressing the reset button and I'm buying a notebook and it's blank and it's gorgeous and beautiful. And maybe I'll buy a new pen. Maybe I'm dating myself here.
I know. I like pens.
I very much like pens. Basically, I could have said a quill and said the same thing. But it is, I like this time of year because I feel like summertime, which I love summer. Summer, I think, is probably my favorite season in general, because I like to be warm. I'm not a big fan of being cold.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. But however, I do find that you get into the dog days of summer, into the really, really hot days, you can't really do very much.
I'm like, now you're dating yourself, the dog days of summer.
Is that was more than pens?
I thought so, but that's just me.
Oh, is this something only old guys say is dog days of summer? But I find you get a little bit lackluster, you get a bit sluggish, you know, you're like, it's too hot to do anything. And then it gets a little bit cold. Like, we've had a cold snap here in Ontario, and it's motivated me.
Really?
It's been like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Let's do stuff. This is exciting. So for example, there are 4.91 million kindergarten to grade 12 students that are enrolled in public schools and 425,000 in private schools. They're all heading back to school essentially this time of year, this week even.
That's a lot of duotangs. That's a lot of new duotangs. That's a lot of duotangs.
For those of you in America or Belize, duotangs, actually Belize, you're probably Canadian. Yeah. Duotangs are binders, essentially. Paper binders.
Is that what they call? Yeah.
Do they have a name? Do they have an American name?
A file folder? Like, I don't think they understand duotangs. It's like when we say pencil crayons, they don't know what we're talking about.
Is that a technology that only Canada has?
Maybe. We're going to have to look that up. I'm going to have to search duotangs, the origin of duotangs.
Yeah. Can we weaponize duotangs? I just wonder if that could help our forces, our armed forces.
Totally. Like if we put pertinent information in a duotang, they wouldn't know how to get it out.
The Calgary Board of Education has 142,402 students enrolled for 2024-2025, a net growth of 4,158 students, up 3% from 2023. There's also 30,000 long-term international K-12 students enrolled in Canada's public schools, which I thought was interesting as well. But it's not all duotangs and new shoes. Did you get new shoes for school?
Always.
Back to school?
Yeah, yeah. New shoes, first day of school outfit. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just one outfit, or did you have a new wardrobe?
Well, you'd go shopping, right? But there was always that, what am I going to wear the first day of school? It was a big deal. It sort of set the tone for the year, right? With your new backpack. And, it was good. I love it.
I remember going to the first day of grade 9 and being terrified because it was going to the high school compared to the middle school I'd gone to.
That's change.
And it's huge change. But I was excited, but I was also really nervous. So I dressed in I'm going to say small C conservative style clothing the first day. And then I remember seeing someone in grade 10 who had long bangs, maybe some eyeliner on and a side button, side zipper shirt. Mm-hmm. And I vividly remember coming down the steps at the school and saying to my friend, I'm going to be so new wave tomorrow.
Do you have your little polo and khakis and Sperry's? Is that what you were wearing when you went to school?
The first day, maybe. Yeah. The second day, it was all tapered
all
rugby
badass.
Pants.
Badass.
Yeah, exactly. Side zip shirts and trying to get my bangs.
Through the establishment.
Exactly. I'm going to be here to dance when the bomb drops. Let's talk about a couple of things. One of the things that's happening, of course, is that Pierre Poilievre won his by-election in Battle River Crowfoot in Alberta.
Mm-hmm. To nobody's surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a surprise to no one. And he's returning to the House of Commons. He's now emphasizing his messaging, largely started off with emphasizing collaboration, including with Carney, Mark Carney, on issues like tariffs and trade. But then, just like switching from preppy clothes to new waiver style, he's publicly pledged to repeal the clean fuel regulations, calling them carbon tax 2.0. The clean fuel regulations, of course, are federal rules requiring fuel producers and importers to reduce the carbon intensity of fuels, of gas and diesel, that type of thing, designed to cut up 26.6 megatons of GHG emissions by 2030. Hmm. So, the idea is to encourage use of biofuels and electric vehicle infrastructure and carbon offsets and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I found his, because I think I saw a post of his a few days ago. Where he essentially started to go after trans people, trans kids again.
Because why not, right? So, yeah, he's just picking up where he left off, right? He was on the campaign trail, and now that's done. So now he's just going back to what he was doing in February, March, just attacking
anything. It doesn't seem like a winning strategy to me.
Well, it depends. I mean, look, it depends on who Pierre Poilievre and the Conservative Party want to be, right? And I think they're sort of in an identity crisis right now because obviously him losing his seat to Bruce, that didn't bode well. And coming to
it was so delicious,
it was
though,
so
wasn't
good.
It?
It was so good.
It was so good.
And then him coming to Alberta and then all the stuff here. The Conservative Party needs to decide who they want to be. Do you want to be a far-right Conservative Party where Pierre is going to do and say all the things that he was doing before? Or do you want to become a softer, gentler Conservative Party to try and, I guess, win back some of the middle. But I think it's hard for somebody like Pierre to change despite, you know, whatever fashion statement he happens to be wearing at any given time. But that's what he knows, right? He knows attacking. He knows pointing fingers. Doesn't really know a lot of how to make things better, right? He's had the advantage of being the one to point fingers at everybody and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Not so much the person to actually make any decisions of any kind. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. But
yeah, I feel like the position of leader of the opposition is a pretty sweet position to be in, because you don't have to take any of the blame for anything. All you can do is point and criticize, and you don't have anyone yelling at you in the supermarket because the price of groceries have gone up.
Right.
Because it's not your fault.
Nope.
It's just not your fault. 68% of current conservative voters support Poilievre, which was surprising, I thought, to me. But it was also surprising in both ways. One, it was a lot. And two, less than I thought in a weird way.
I guess, yeah. Well, and I mean, he's coming up for his review in January. So it's going to be dependent on, you know, who the CPC wants to... I don't know that they're going to get rid of him. They're going to keep him. They are.
You think so?
I don't think they're organized enough right now or know what direction they want to go in to oust him and bring somebody. Who are they going to bring in?
Well, I know there's no real front runners. Right? I mean, you can't, like, Melissa Lansman? No, I don't think so. I think maybe Michelle Ferrari is sitting in the wings just waiting. Just
in her bathtub.
She's going to try to find the second best riding to run in. What was interesting to me is another stat is that 54% of potential conservative voters, those who didn't vote CPC last time, would prefer a new leader. To me, as someone who's in charge of the Conservative Party, well, I'm not in charge of the Conservative Party, thankfully, but if I were, I would be looking at that number going, what's wrong with us? Like, why are we stuck in this one gear?
They have a hard time saying what's wrong with us because they're so busy saying what's wrong with everybody else, right? But
Hey-o.
But that's fair because I think that's what sort of swung the middle group of people to vote Liberal, right? Mm-hmm. Because we basically have put in a soft C conservative under the Liberal Party. And for I believe that there are a lot of conservatives that aren't horrible people. I believe there are a lot of...
Bold statement.
Right? I know.
No, I agree. Very I agree with you entirely, of course.
Very unlikely. Absolutely. And then there's the other group that is just fascism good. But I think for that middle group, they sort of didn't know where to go. And the positive of that is that they couldn't vote for the CPC as it is with Pierre because that hopefully doesn't align with their moral conscience, right? So I think... If there was a new leader, if the Conservative Party decided to go, hey, maybe we should look at the past and what that looked like and how we can, maybe they would have a chance at winning a federal election. But right now, I don't know.
I would like to see the Conservative Party get better in general.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like you know, previously in my life, I've voted for all three major parties. I've voted for NDP, I've voted for the Conservatives, and I've voted for Liberals. I largely vote for the Liberals, mainly because it seems like most middle of the road option to be like, well, the NDP have got some great ideas, but I don't think they're really grounded in reality sometimes. And the Conservatives, they just seem evil. So...
I think
pick the lesser of three evils, but I find it interesting that the Conservative Party, we need a good Conservative Party in general because you want the opposition to do a good job first of all, and I think it's just the Pierre show currently, and I don't see that changing.
I mean, there's a lot of ego right now in the CPC, but I think you're right. I think having a better Conservative Party federally makes all other parties better because you're not dealing with all the noise that they're creating with the ridiculousness. You can actually focus on real life problems. And so I think it brings everybody up to the challenge, right? As it stands now, and like even in probably in the 10 years of Trudeau, You spent a lot of time trying to counter misinformation and disinformation, which takes energy and time away from actually working on solutions. And I think that makes people feel just sort of apathetic when you see, like, you know, kids just arguing about things and not really getting to the point of what needs to be done. And I think, you know, Canada has suffered a little bit because of that. So I would, yeah. I would encourage, if you are a CPC cardholder and you are voting in the upcoming review, think about that. Think about where you want to go, because if you really, truly want the CPC to hold power, I think you guys need to rethink where you're going and how you're getting there, because it's not working right now.
I think especially in light of what's happening in the U.S., I think people, the reason, of course, that Carney was so wildly successful considering things, all the various variables, was the fact that a lot of Canadians looked at what's happening in the U.S. and said, doesn't look great. Mm-hmm. Doesn't look awesome. That whole pathway doesn't look awesome. Maybe we should take the other way instead. And I hope that changes. I hope that changes soon. I did really enjoy Polyev's statement, and I was trying to find the exact statement and I can't find it. I'll have to paraphrase, so just bear with me. When he was complaining about Prime Minister Carney's tactics with Trump, mm-hmm. with the tariffs, and said, listen, he's doing it all wrong. If it was me, I'd just go to talk to President Trump and I'd say, listen, we want a fair deal.
Cut it out.
And it's like, where have you been, dude? Like, what news have you been consuming?
He's been in the back roads of Alberta trying to get a seat. That's what he's been doing.
It was craziness. It was just sort of a so wildly out of touch take on things and oversimplistic. And it's like, oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, that'll work perfect. No one's thought of that.
Oh, just to ask? Especially, God.
Flashback to Trudeau sitting in Mar-a-Lago, sort of politely sitting at that table.
You know,
smiling.
He's just like, oh, God, like, I'll take my steak to go.
Did you know that at that Mar-a-Lago dinner that Trudeau was at, mm-hmm. Of course, I think it's widely known that Trump has an iPad that he plays DJ with. He chooses the music. Okay.
Okay.
And there's like, I think he played two different versions of Ave Maria.
Oh, good.
During dinner. But then most of fantastically played the U.S. national anthem twice, and everyone had to stop what they were doing, stand up twice. I think it was at that point that Trudeau probably went, you know what? I'd rather be doing Katy Perry.
He wants to kiss a girl. I can't even imagine having grandpa choose the music over the course of a dinner, whatever it is. Like, it's
nightmare.
It just represents what's happening in the U.S. It's just willy-nilly, you know, I'm gonna press this button today, I'm gonna press this. I think what people need to understand too, like, when we're thinking about Pierre, and like, if we have a Pierre that is leader of this country and what's happening in the U.S., Canadians need to realize we will always be like that, like the baby of that thing that's happening there. We're never going to be the powerhouse above the U.S. when it comes to like this fascist, you know, crystal fascist thing that they're doing there. So we're always going to be like that weird brother that kind of like hangs out on the side. It's not going to benefit us at all. And whether people think what's happening now is benefiting us or not, but like, that certainly is. And if you are trying to mimic what is happening over here, it's never going to work. Like, it's just never going to work. And we'll always be taken advantage of because of that, because there's nobody standing up to it. It's somebody trying to be that and just not able to be that. I couldn't imagine the last 5 months of all the stuff that's happening in the U.S., internationally, right, and also having to deal with the EU and Mexico, and it being Pierre Poilievre sitting at the table. Like, can you imagine?
I just don't think he has that gear at all. Like, I think he has the sitting down smiling at the Mar-a-Lago table gear.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the ability to realize this isn't going to work.
No.
I can't do this.
Like, this is real life. This isn't just, you know, showing up to the same job you've been at it for 20 plus years and pointing out everybody else's faults. Like, you have to actually do something. You have to actually mm-hmm. be a problem solver in this. I just think our international image, No. Yeah. I can't. I shudder. I don't think about it. But that's a distinct worry. And so again, the CPC needs to really think about that on a bigger scale moving forward.
Yeah, I hope that Canada can kind of lead by example. You look around the world politically, and there's kind of a leaning or a toying with, you know, they're kind of fascist curious.
Little cat and mouse.
Exactly. they're kind of somewhat interested, and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fascist question. Exactly. I'm kind of fascist fluid. It's dangerous. And I think I don't wish ill on the United States.
No,
I hope they steer out of this for sure. However, if they don't steer out of it, and it's shocking. I did a Zoom event with the Cat Ladies for America. A couple of nights ago, and it was amazing. It's an amazing organization. They have chapters, 30 chapters all over the U.S. They have like hundreds of thousands of members, and it's all born from the J.D. Vance childless cat lady mm-hmm. comment mm-hmm. from 2020. And the scary thing about talking to them was the reality that they have is they suggest doing resistance type movements now, sort of like standing up, speaking your mind, protesting, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. Doing it now because they think that in about 6 months' time, they're not going to be able to do it, mm-hmm. which is terrifying, especially in America, of all places. So I think that
the
I
land
don't wish
of the free?
On,
yeah, you're right.
The land of the air quotes free. And I think I don't wish ill on the United States of America. I want them to do well. I want them to be the best version of the USA they can be. However, I feel that the direction they're going, that things are going to get uglier, and I'm hoping that that is used as a lesson to other countries around the world to look at and go, ugh, mm-hmm. those guys can't pull it off. We can't do it.
Yeah. And same. I wish no ill will. Like, Americans, I think, are just like Albertans, right? We don't all want what we have.
Yeah, sure.
We're stuck with it. Somehow it happened. And so, you know, trying to figure out how to maneuver that, and the bad decisions and poor policies and restrictions that are happening, to people's freedom in the most land of the free places, is hard for people, right? And people need to stand up. Mm. If there's a moment in time where nobody's standing and everybody's sitting, that's the end, right? Like, yeah. like the, yeah. the fascist, whatever, or authoritarianism is going to come right in and squash it. And then all that activism has to then become subversive. And then you're like an enemy of the state, basically. Yeah. Right. And with him pulling, just having military now in DC, and he wants to like militarize everything, like that is terrifying. But it mirrors Alberta. Like, we want an Alberta police force. Why do you want an Alberta police force? Right.
So, that line between, you know, administration or politicians and law enforcement, mm-hmm. there needs to be a clear division and very arm's length yeah. between those two, just for lots of good reasons. Yeah. I'm going to take us in a different direction now, which was something that seems initially minor is actually turning out to be a pretty big deal. So as of August 29th, the U.S. has revoked the de minimis exemption of tariffs and duties for goods valued under $800 that are coming from Canada, actually coming from anywhere, really. But prior to this August 29th date, the goods valued at under $800 US entered duty-free from Canada. Now, all Canadian goods shipped to the US face duties and processing fees, regardless of value, unless the people shipping them become CUSMA compliant, which is a whole deal. It's not an easy process. So this has been, so for example, a $37 Canadian product can now cost up to $60 US for a US buyer, duties and fees. That is if the US buyer is made to pay the cost of the shipping, which I would hope they would be. Mm-hmm. However, what's interesting about this shift is that, of course, it's affecting lots of small businesses. And honestly, in full disclosure, it's affecting our PeaceLoveCanada.ca business as well, in that we have just decided to stop shipping to the U.S. We're just not doing it. Because it's, and the reason we're not doing it, it's the same as numerous other countries like the UK, Japan have all decided we're not shipping parcels and packages to the US right now until this gets cleared up, because it's going to be a train wreck of parcels arriving at people's doorsteps with bills for $60 to $200 each, and they're going to get canceled, mm-hmm. shipped back, and then it's going to be up to the companies and countries to take the stuff back, and it's just a whole mess, terrible, terrible mess. The reason we stopped doing it, as opposed to just sort of, you know, making a $45 t-shirt that included shipping now cost $80, mm-hmm. was the fact that Canada Post is now requiring people shipping goods to the U.S. under $800 to pay for those duties in advance. So Canadians are paying for them. Canada Post has partnered with a company called Zonos to manage duty prepayment for U.S. bound parcels. All duties must be prepaid before entry into Canada Post system. So you can't even send, I cannot even send an item to the U.S., a package to the U.S. without paying duty fees, the U.S. duty fees up front myself.
So you pay it as a small business.
Yeah.
It goes where it needs to go. The mm-hmm. person receiving it in the U.S. then pays their portion of duty.
No, I've already
paid
it.
You're paying it in advance? So mm-hmm. you have to pre-charge them, basically.
That's right.
Oh, no.
So it makes smaller business, like stuff valued $800 U.S. and less. It makes it seem not as feasible
yeah.
as a business. Because, again, like a $45 t-shirt becomes $80.
All-inclusive,
And it's just seems unreasonable, and that's ridiculous. The thing that really stuck out to me about this, and really kind of, I hated the fact, because Shannon runs Peace Love Canada, and she does all the shipping organization, all that kind of stuff, and administration for the company, and she does an amazing job. Mm-hmm. We don't have a dining table anymore, but I mean, apart from that, it's great. But what's, you know, what made us decide to not ship to the U.S. as current was because we had to pay these fees up front. So suddenly it was like, well, wait a minute, now Trump's tariffs, essentially, we have to pay for those, mm-hmm. or we have to try to convince our customer to pay an exorbitant amount. Just right. not going to work. It's not worth it. Not worth the hassle. It's not worth explaining to people and all that kind of stuff. But the part that really bothered me was that Canada Post has partnered with this company, Zonos, which is an American company. Why?
Like,
why?
We don't have anything, comparable in Canada.
Like, putting your hand up for money?
Right?
Seems simple, doesn't
right?
it?
Right? I'm sure a lot of businesses would like, hey, I'll help you with that. Canada Post, see, this is why you're a problem.
You heard it here, folks. Lisa wants the end of Canada
Post. No, I don't want the end of Canada Post. I want the end of Canada Post management making poor decisions. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'd like.
Well, that's one of the things I looked up when we were deciding what to talk about this episode was if the CEOs of Zonos and Canada Post knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I could find, they don't have any sort of noted
relation
connection to each other.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. I don't trust the CEO of Canada Post. I think he's CEO of Purolator as well, which is Canada Post courier operation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel that it's not being managed as well as it could be. And I think this optically does not help that at all.
No. And that's the problem with a, you know, ground corporation that is somewhat independent. They get to make their own decisions on how operations work, right? Not optically, yeah. not great, especially when you're still in bargaining and you're saying you can't pay your workers, but you're going to contract out to somebody in the States to take money from people.
Yeah, which is
yay.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's
so what I mean, optically, that's basically to me saying, okay, Canadians and Canadian business, we're going to have to figure out a way to pay Donald Trump's new tariffs.
Yeah.
We're going to have to figure that out. And we're going to give that money to an American company. You pay us, we'll give it to an American company.
And we'll pay them.
and they'll pay them. It's like, what? No.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
There's a whole lot wrong with that. The thing with this whole, like, issue is that I think when we're talking tariffs and, you know, when all the threats were coming down, everyone's thinking big business and industry, right? Like steel and lumber and all those kinds of things that are going to be impacted. And screw you, US, you're going to have to pay more when you buy stuff from us that you need to buy. And it's all like very much bravado, right? I was doing the elbows up, which I still believe in. But I think now we're getting to a point in the minutiae of all of this and people not understanding Kuzma and the importance of it and how it was to be beneficial for all parties, right? So that small businesses like, you know, grandma making doll clothes that she puts on Etsy and wants to send to, you know, people in the States to get a little money are now the ones being impacted. Not saying big business and industry isn't being impacted. They don't feel it as much as somebody who has a little side business or an actual, like, this is how they live, right? Is by whatever business they're doing. And now they're going to be hindered by this because their customers that they may have had for a long time are going to be like, whoa, I was paying $40 for something that I really liked and needed. And now you're charging me 80. That's no. I'll find it somewhere down the street, which is the point that Trump is trying to make, is that fuck you, Canada. We don't need you. We will find it internally. That's.
And of course, what's happening as well with small businesses, like for example, any business that sends through UPS or FedEx or whatever, like UPS has a brokerage fee they attach to it as top. So even though even if it's being paid, you're going to pay their brokerage fee on top of that as well. So it might cost you, you know, $20 for something under $350. It might cost you $20 brokerage fees plus the additional tariff fee on whatever it is you're sending. That, of course, as I'm saying, that it doesn't apply to Kuzma compliant businesses. But I wanted to find out what that meant.
Yeah.
I didn't know, like, what's the deal with that? Especially as a business owner, I was like, you know, I want to know.
How much paperwork is involved in being Kuzma compliant?
Yeah. If it's more than one, maybe I'll do it. Maybe. We'll see. To qualify for tariff-free export under Kuzma, Canadian exporters must meet the rules of origin. So products must be made in North America or meet regional content thresholds. So it's like, okay. Oh, that's good.
Tick.
File certification of origin can be informal, but must include 9 mandatory data points. Must be retained for 5 to 7 years in case of customs audit. There's legal consulting fees of $500 to $5,000 depending on complexity. There's brokerage customs fees of $10 to $100 per shipment. And there's ongoing compliance with HS code classification, content tracking, etc. Expect delays when things like incorrect paperwork, shipment holds, duties charged or returns, automated systems on platforms, Shopify, etc. may not fully support Kuzma compliance. So it's just like this is, if you're doing an Etsy business, it's a no.
It's a no.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just if you're doing a major, if your business is dealing in the millions of dollars a week of sending stuff to the US, totally worth it.
Yep.
If you've just got a mom and pop business like Peace Love Canada is and lots of other businesses, it's not worth it. So for example, Steve Malia from Starfield Optics telescope accessories. That's cool, isn't
neat.
It? Okay. Isn't that cool? Things there's I small businesses in Canada.
Yeah,
I know. I said, I'm now dealing with 35% tariffs on US bound orders. Kuzma compliance is costly and time consuming. Jennifer Birch of Hightail Hair, another e-commerce shop. The tariffs and uncertainty are seriously impacting our growth plans. So yeah, it's not great for companies that that ship to the US. I panicked when I saw when I was fully grasping the fact that the de minimis was no longer going to be there for shipments under $800. And luckily I checked and the vast majority of our orders for Peace Love Canada are in Canada. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of American customers, but percentage wise, small. So I feel bad for those American customers because they're great and we really appreciate their business, but it's not worth it.
You can't do like a run of t-shirts across the border.
We could. One of the things we looked at is having the t-shirts, the US customer t-shirts and stuff and products manufactured in the US and shipped from the US. But that also kind of felt like we let Trump win.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard. I think, you know, again, the bigger picture of why these deals existed wasn't just for big business, right? It was like the exemptions were for small businesses. And like, how does this affect? And I am not a fan by any stretch of the imagination, but like Shopify has some sway, right? Like, can't they, this is going to impact them. Can't they make a push with DJT?
Well,
feel like they're in with him, don't, aren't they?
yeah, a couple of them at the top are certainly quite happy and fine with the U.S., current U.S. Mm-hmm. administration. And I'm not super happy about that. People would give us a hard time about that, about using Shopify for the core of our mm-hmm. online shop. It is a fantastic system.
Right.
And it's amazing system. It does everything you need it to do and more. And then finding out those guys were kind of dorks was annoying. And we would get people hassling us saying, you know, you can't use, these guys are terrible. And so it's like, well, we're using a Canadian company. Our options otherwise are American companies.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard, right? You have to kind of weigh the pros and cons of every decision you make as a Canadian small business, because the U.S. is impactful, right? So it's like, do you mm-hmm. go through that selling provider? Do you have it manufactured in the States? Because let's be real, it's probably cheaper for a small business Absolutely. To have it manufactured in the States.
Yeah,
right?
We'd make more money.
Exactly.
For sure.
I just feel badly. I think there's a lot of people, especially, you know, around the pandemic, were like, well, what can I do from home? Right? Like, what kind of business can I do from home? And this is going to impact them. And that is wrong, right? Like, I mean, everything that's happening in the U.S. with Trump and his decisions, his unilateral decisions on whatever day he decides to make them, are terrible. Mm-hmm. But like, I think Canada needs to start looking at, okay, maybe we need to have elbows up just a little bit higher. Like, you know what I mean? Maybe we need to really start pushing back, because this is now affecting everyday people in our country by somebody making decisions that doesn't live here that is now yeah. impacting us. And that's not okay.
I think it's a good encouragement for Canadians to support. I'm not just saying support me, but yeah, I am. Absolutely support me.
And what was the name of that website God. Again?
peacelovecanada.ca. Please buy things.
Keep Shannon busy.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep her busy. No, it's not just our shop, obviously, but I mean, I think that it's important to encourage Canadians at this particular point in time to support Canadian businesses.
Yeah.
One of the benefits of the whole 51st state annexation talk and tariff garbage has been that, you know, people are more focused on what they're buying. Like, I know that Shannon is laser focused on making sure everything we have is made in Canada.
Yeah.
And that's not easy. She spent, I think, a month trying to find toothpaste. That was made in Canada.
Yeah.
so we found some, which is great. And she still has all her teeth.
Yep.
So that's good. That's a good sign. But I think it's good for that. It's been good for that part of Canada to be like, we have lots of good stuff. We just kind of default sometimes to American made stuff because they're just louder.
Yep.
And we don't have to.
No.
We don't have to.
My hope is that that hasn't waned, right? Like,
yeah.
When it first came down about, we want to take us over. I hope people are still doing it. I don't think people are. I think it has waned a little bit, but I think we need to do constant reminders. I think the government needs to do reminders. I think businesses need to do reminders because, like, for me now, I mean, I used to go grocery shopping, right? Obviously. And initially I was like, I can't read every label. This is going to take me 4 hours to do groceries.
Yeah.
So now I do. I shop online, right? And I get it delivered from my local grocery stores. But I have an opportunity to like look at it and then go and see, is this actually made in Canada? Like, what part of it's made in Canada? And it's hard. Like, it is hard. But we do have a lot of comparable things that we can use. We don't have to give money to the U.S. And I thought that was the whole point, that we were trying to crush them a little bit before they crush us.
Yeah, I think I think even if the case wasn't trying to crush the U.S., the case was to show the U.S. we're mm-hmm. not really that easily crushable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also important for Canadians to remember that, and again, this doesn't just apply to Peace of Canada, but for example, there's lots of companies who are Canadian companies like Shopify, mm-hmm. who are kind of, they have some dickish views every now and then. But they're Canadian companies, and the alternative is not a Canadian company.
Yeah.
And things like our apparel, like our T-shirts, a lot of the T-shirts, we do have one by King Athletic, which is made in Calgary, like knit mm-hmm. and sewn in Calgary and everything. It's amazing. Really, really great product, but premium cost, like really, really expensive.
Yeah.
The other companies we work with are Gildan. Gildan is a Canadian company, but is also an international company. So it's a Canadian success story, really. And even though the stuff isn't made in Canada, it's not made in the US and it's not made for a US company. Yeah. So there's a weird trade-off you have to make. You have to kind of be realistic, I think, about what you're doing, unless, you know, we often get people saying, we want to have more made in Canada stuff. And then you provide them a t-shirt and say, great, your t-shirt's costing you $65. Yeah, and they're like, what?
Yeah, I know.
Like,
yeah, crazy. Listen, I want to move on. I want to head west.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Manitoba?
Wester.
Wester.
Yeah. More wester than that. The Alberta teachers are 95% of Alberta teachers voted in favor of strike action. If no agreement is reached during the mediated talks, a strike could begin next week. I don't know where we're at. I haven't been following where we're at, but the demands, I think, are always really important to talk about. Union demands wage increases that reflect inflation, smaller class sizes, more classroom support staff. This seems like a pretty common thing for teachers to ask for.
I'm pretty sure it's just the same proposals they put forward every time because it's the same issues that never get solved. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what's happening.
12% wage increase spread over 4 years, $400 million pledged towards classroom improvements is what the government has offered. Mm-hmm. The president of the Alberta Teachers Association, Jason Schilling, said teachers are unified. The conditions they face are unacceptable. I mean.
Oh, here we go.
No. Okay. No. We know what my feelings are generally on teachers' unions. They have benefits. They have benefits with the benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
But I don't always necessarily see eye to eye with the hierarchy and the management of unions.
Sure.
But I do feel that teachers asking for smaller class sizes and wage increases that reflect inflation. Yeah. And classroom support staff, having been a teacher briefly for 6 months in total, I left. I wasn't kicked out. I know firsthand that it's a thing. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's a job. And especially if you're dealing with younger kids, I dealt with kids who were in grade 12. So they were just adults. They're just idiot adults.
Wow.
But I mean, if you're dealing with primary school kids and stuff and you've got 34 of them in your classroom, that's a lot. That's a lot to ask for.
It's a lot. And I think that, you know, I mean, bargaining is a process, right? And obviously they went through those steps and then, you know, mediation and then, strike vote, and then trying to mediate an agreement. And then they were back at the table, I think, this week. It takes a lot to get that high of a strike vote, like a mandate for strike, right?
Is that unusual, that 95%?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's very much a reflection of the feeling and the climate in Alberta that it was that high of the people that voted, right? And so, I mean, it's a message to the government. And if the government is now starting to realize that, you know, whether it's teachers, whether it's other areas in the province that are collective bargaining right now, that they had to move away from what their initial mandate was, which was just a pittance. Like it was an embarrassment, really, an insult to people, but it's still not enough. And I think that's what the ATA, I mean, I don't believe it went well the other day. I think there was I think the government got in front of it, but basically I think there was a walk away from the table because although there were some, I don't want to say concessions, but some moving in certain areas, the primary thing for teachers, unfortunately, is pay. They put in a lot of extra hours. They, a lot of time by their own resources. They, because of all the things that they're having to deal with, they feel that they are more valuable than what the government feels they are. And so that may be the impetus for a walkout to actually happen. Now there's steps. They have to serve the strike, like the notice to actually strike the 72 hours or what have you. So we'll find out next week what happens. But if the teachers say, you know, okay, this is what the government wants to offer us now, we still don't accept it, then hope you find day homes for your kids next week, people, because that's what's going to happen. And people better be supporting the teachers. So if I'm just going to put this out there, if teachers do strike, please go and support them on a strike line. Bring them coffee, bring them donuts, honk when you drive by, because it, I'm going to say none of them want to be on that line. None of them are going to want to walk out of their classrooms, but they are put in a position where they can no longer sacrifice their own well-being for the kids that they are there to help, right? So
it's a frustrating position because, of course, as a parent, when there was teacher strike stuff happening, it was horrible because there are lots of reasons. One, I mean, never mind the childcare aspect of it. That's its own thing. And that's just a realistic issue that you have to deal with regardless. And it's, there's an equation between sending your kid to school and sending your kid to childcare. I mean, so you're just looking to someone to look after your kid for that amount of time. So you can go work and make money.
Yeah.
That's, if they learn something, that's a bonus.
Right.
They make friends, it's even better.
Come home in one piece, that's all I ask for.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's going great. But of course, when they get, I always found like when they get older, like I know that Dalhousie University is, the faculty was on strike or doing a walkout, I think. I'm not making that up, I don't think. But I feel like, I always feel for kids who are in the end of high school and in university or college, because it's like, this is, we're on to real life timelines now. So this isn't about childcare.
Yeah.
This is about delaying people's lives, which makes me angry, not just at the union, but angry at the school boards and stuff as well. At the same time, it's like, guys, get it. Like, no one should be walking away from the table. No one should be dumb enough to present something that's not a negotiable offer. Meaning I never understand how they're so far apart.
Because you shoot for the moon, right? You're not going to walk in and say we want
this. You're not buying a car.
No, but like, we'll be the same kind of process, right? Like, I mean, realistically, when you're bargaining, you're going through all the language that is associated with your collective agreement. You're looking for improvements. Generally, when bargaining happens, you deal with all the non-monetary stuff first, right? To try and get all those things sorted out. And then where it, you know, it hits the ground is when you're talking about monetary. Of course, we're going to overshoot, right? Like, that's just how you do it. But, and the other side is going to undershoot, and you hope to try and make it to the middle. And I think that's the whole point of mediation, right? Is that the mediators assigned to things are trying to get people to a middle ground. But teachers are responsible for your children. The schools are responsible for your children for 6 or 7 hours a day. They need to be properly compensated. And I hate it when people are like, teachers make money already and they already get 2 months off a year. It like that. Don't vote. Like if those are the kinds of things you think, just don't vote. There's so much more to it than that. But the reality of the situation is teachers go into teaching because they want to, you know, mold young people into adults, and that's all fine and good. But again, not at your own peril. And I think a lot of teachers for a lot of time have been doing things at their own peril. This province, in Danny's like little Alberta Next panels, like she's of course talking about immigration, and immigration is the peril of everything that is in Alberta, including education. Equalization payments going to Ottawa because apparently Ottawa steals all the money from Alberta. And because of that, they can't give more to teachers and education and schools and EAs and things like that. But they also didn't want to pay EAs, and EAs had to go on strike in the depths of winter. So kudos to them to get like crumbs from this government. I believe that this government doesn't want to give anything to education, even though they have to, because if you keep people ignorant to things, then you have a better chance of getting reelected, right? And so it all kind of plays into one another. At the end of the day, a worker is a worker and has to take a stand on whether or not they feel that they are valued by their employer or the people that are bargaining at the table. And so I will always support teachers, because after reading what has been proposed and what was, you know, asked at the table, I don't think it's unreasonable for what they're asking. I really don't.
I think good teachers, and there's more good teachers than bad teachers. I think good teachers are worth their weight in gold because they are providing more than just childcare for your kid. They're providing, you know, education. They're providing life lessons. Mm-hmm. They're helping to guide your child's character. And that's incredibly valuable, incredibly important. I do still think it is reprehensible to have both sides and reprehensible and juvenile mm-hmm. to have both sides shoot for the moon. Because it's like, we know where this is even in business. This gets me, it drives me insane is when you have to play this game and it's like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm. Just
tell me where the line is. And then we'll try to get as close as we can to that line. And I know it's not as easy to solve as that, but it's so frustrating I'm sure it is as a parent of kids who are in school to be like, shoot for the moon. No, let's not shoot for the moon. What do we need? What do we need? And ask for that.
Well, and wouldn't that be nice?
And not give up.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice if all sides were reasonable, right? But unfortunately, when we're dealing with the government in Alberta, it's unreasonable and they absolutely undervalued and undershot their mandate. And to be fair, having the government mandate wages as part of a bargaining process, in my mind, is not bargaining in good faith. It doesn't allow you an opportunity to bargain because the government has said, we are giving this, that is what we are approving. So how do you negotiate if they've already mandated that, right? And that's like universal across the province, doesn't matter what union, doesn't matter what sector. That's what this government did. And so because they've taken a hard stance, the other side also has to take a hard stance. And trust me when I say, like, I know a lot of teachers and I know that, like, this isn't fun for anybody. They understand that, you know, at every level, whether it's, you know, elementary or junior high, like, there's milestones that these kids have to, you know, get through in order to move on to the next phase. And so for kids in grade 12 who are, you know, going to be starting and worrying about diploma exams and all these kinds of things, this is an added stressor. Absolutely. But I don't believe that the province of Alberta's current government, where they use the narrative, I don't think they like that teachers are the ones molding the kids, right? Yeah. That's a parental right. But that's the reality. We all have teachers in our history that were impactful to us, right? And maybe, you know, we say there's more good than bad teachers. But maybe if they were compensated appropriately, we would have all good teachers, right? And they would be able
I don't think so.
Well, whatever. but they would be able to at least provide resources for kids, right? Like, we don't have librarians in schools. We don't have, you know,
which is insanity,
right? We don't have consistent school counselors. Like, I remember when I was in high school, we had to meet with our school counselor all the time to talk about, like, university requirements and all that stuff. It got to the point where it was annoying, but at least they were there as a resource. There's a lot of stuff that isn't there right now. And, you know, this government is blaming the school boards now. They're passing the buck on the school boards that there's mismanagement of funds. No, it's not. Like, it takes a lot to run a school. It takes a lot to educate children. So get back to the table, government of Alberta, and don't be a dick.
I agree. Get back to the table. Let's get on with it. Yep. This is just wasting everybody's lifetime. Yep. Lifetime.
Kids have Joatangs to buy, God damn it.
Exactly. To bring us right back to our starting over theme. So yeah, so what does starting over really means is politicians are rebranding or trying to or saying they are. I don't know if they actually are or not. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Polyev. Businesses are rewriting shipping policies on the fly, which is always not fun. Yeah. And teachers are drawing a line in the chalk dust. Do you like that?
Oh, I like that.
They still use chalk?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. It's all smart boards now, isn't it? Is that where all the money's going? Smart boards?
Probably.
Why not just a big box of chalk? That's all they need.
Get back to basics.
The slate.
Just ashes on the wall. Yeah.
Exactly. Before we wrap up, a reminder. Payroll is the thing keeping this whole dreaming big business alive. From your very first paycheck to lifelong security, there's always a payroll pro making it happen. And they deserve some love. National Payroll Week is September 15th to 19th, and the National Payroll Institute wants your stories. Maybe it was a first job, a leave you planned for, or just that one Friday you weren't living on borrowed coffee and good intentions. Post your story with hashtag Power of Payroll and hashtag Contest. Tag National Payroll Institute, and you could win a $250 prepaid credit card. Plus, every post sends $1 to Food Banks Canada, up to $25,000. So share your payroll story, because getting paid matters. Without it, this podcast would just be called Politics Is Not Happening, I guess. None of us wants that. Well, hey, listen, thanks for listening to Politics Is Broken. It's been a fun episode, an inaugural episode of Politics Is Broken. You can find us, of course, at brittlestar.com on your favorite podcasting platform. And yeah, there you go.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. We had a good time. Nice having coffee with you.
You've been listening to Politics is Broken with Brittle Star and Lisa B. The audio version of this podcast is produced by Owen Reynolds for the Podcast is Broken Network. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and comment. And don't forget to check out BrittleStar.com for more.